you've been avoiding me, Gregory.
You amaze me, Alphonse. He's still alive.
It's not very friendly.
Don't take it personally, Alphonse. I just don't like you.
Yeah, and why's that, mate? Nothing to do with the money you owe me.
Go and peddle your Shylock bullshit somewhere else, mate.
Mate, I've been called a lot of things in my life. Shy's not one of them. I want my money.
I eat fucking nothing, Greaseball.
You've been away a long time. Maybe you don't know who you're talking to.
Oh, loudmouth wog with a gun in his pocket?
Yeah, mate. You got half of that right. Now let's start again, shall we? You owe me money.
Gone from stand over to stand up, I see.
In fact, I say you owe me 10 large, and by Wednesday it's going to be 15.
You were never any good at maths, Alphonse. Let's say I owe you nothing, and on Wednesday, it'll still be nothing.
Don't turn your back on me, you prick. I'm Alphonse Gangitano. No one turns their back on Alphonse Gangitano.
You're a plastic gangster with a big mouth and no brains. You always were. You always will be.
Still think I'm a plastic gangster? I'm Alphonse Gangitano and I run this town.
Meet Alphonse Gangitano, an underbelly figure with a gangster fetish who bashed and murdered his way to the top of the Melbourne crime scene in the 1990s. Tonight we look at the life and crimes of the man who crowned himself the Black Prince of Lygon Street, Alphonse Gangitano. Through dramatised scenes, first-hand accounts and detailed analysis of Gangitano's life, we will give a comprehensive portrait of the middle-class private schoolboy turned multiple murderer, thug and standover man. While other kids dreamt of being rock stars, Gangitano only ever wanted to be a gangster.
Alphonse was weak as piss. I mean, he was a self-created gangster.
You know who I am?
Oh.
Alphonse Gangitano. Now get out of the car.
He really wanted to become a godfather.
And the ultimate gangster is a person who can take life without feeling.
Gangitano was just had this capacity for unlimited violence.
Really want to emphasise, you scratch a bully, underneath, you'll always find a coward.
I turned to Alphonse and I said, you effing so-and-so, you've set me up. And he just lunged at me and he grabbed me by the lapels of my jacket.
He was hell-bent on becoming a chalk outline in the footpath.
Gangitano had a reputation for viciousness in the Melbourne underworld. His violent impulses led him to graduate to crimes of greater magnitude, eventually becoming the most dangerous man on Melbourne streets in the 1980s and 1990s. Amazingly, all the while he kept a wife and family at home who were unaware of his murderous nature. Gangitano saw himself as the Black Prince, but behind his back, cops and crims called him a plastic gangster, a man more concerned with his image than building a real criminal empire. But that just made him all the more dangerous, as Greg Workman found out one evening in 1995 in the Melbourne beachside suburb of St Kilda.
Alphonse sought and to some extent gained a reputation as a man who could get whatever he wanted. It was something he worked hard on. A lot of his crimes were not motivated by money, but by prestige or building up of respect.
Couldn't be told anything. I'm Alphonse, so. And I had that attitude, you don't fucking talk to me.
Yeah, and,
but it was just the way he was. He didn't have that accent, but that's what the way he thought he should talk to people. And he'd just jump in and belt anybody at the drop of a hat.
He was involved in illegal gambling, an assault merchant, carried weapons, a bit of a kingpin merchant in that regard, and try to build up a reputation of being a pretty much a gangster, as it were, but in his own mind, really.
He started wearing nothing but suits and nothing but slip-on shoes and combing his hair backwards and wearing sunglasses at night time and drinking red wine in Lygon Street all day long. And he really thought he was in the bloody mafia.
Well, Gangitano could switch in a second. People talked of Alphonse one minute all happy, friendly. Next minute, he's bashing someone with a bottle. You know, it was that kind of character. There was apparently some business between he and Workman. Workman was a well-credentialed villain. He'd been an armed robber. He'd been involved in the amphetamine trade. He was developing a reputation as a speed cook. So he was a very valuable guy in the underworld. So there was apparently some money issues between he and Gangitano. Gangitano flipped and emptied a gun into him. Circumstances aren't well known because the witnesses were paid off and flown overseas and never testified.
Well, unfortunately, the case looked pretty good at the start of it, as I understand it. They had two females who I understand were sisters, who at that time made themselves known to the police. They made statements, and given the person the police were dealing with, were put into witness protection. They were approached by some criminal element, which then led to them fleeing overseas, them not being able to give evidence. The prosecution case collapsed, and he was never brought before trial.
And so we'll never know the exact circumstances of that murder, but suffice it to say that Workman wouldn't have taken a backward step either, but Gangitano had this capacity for unlimited violence, so it may have taken him by surprise.
The two witnesses fled overseas in fear of their lives. Forensic psychologist Bob Montgomery believes the murder of Workman is evidence Gangitano was a psychopath.
But understand what turning your back on someone means. And this is the absolute rejection, an expression of contempt. You're not even worth talking to. That would infuriate the narcissistic, the self-centred flavour of a typical psychopath.
Don't turn your back on me, you prick. I'm Alphonse Gangitano. No one turns their back on Alphonse Gangitano.
Really heightened sense of their personal value, grandiosity, demanding special treatment, which this guy did, often by producing a gun. And all of that's wrapped in this sense of I'm important, I'm powerful. So you turn your back on me, you've really done the wrong thing.
So in Gangitano's case, so the fact that he was actually quick to anger and the fact that he seems to kill without a second thought, those behaviours suggest psychopathic personality traits wherein you don't really think about what you're doing, you get frustrated, you get angry, then you just act on it.
Gangitano, if he shoots you in the back other than the front, in my opinion, he wanted me to join his gang. I didn't want to join his gang. It meant getting yourself a suit and sitting around Johnny's green room till 3 in the bloody morning drinking coffee. You know, I didn't want to wear a suit and sit around Johnny's green room till 3 in the morning and pretend I was in the mafia with a pair of slip-on shoes on and a bloody suit. I used to watch the Godfather movie half of a dozen times a night and go out and pretend that they're in the bloody mafia.
Alphonse Gangitano was born in Queen Victoria Hospital, Melbourne, on the 24th of March 1957. His mother Maria and his father Dominic were delighted that their first child was a son. They doted on him. They had a daughter some years later, but Alphonse was the apple of their eye. They quickly learned, however, that their son was different.
His parents were respected and liked in the district where they worked in Carlton, had a great reputation there with our travel agents. Alphonse was the despair of their life as they tried to make amends for his bashings and his insults and whatever else he'd got up to.
He was a private school boy, posh, Italian, sort of like wannabe gangster. He went to posh schools and his mum and dad had money.
Not every gangster, not every violent person comes from an impoverished background. There are people who come from very well-to-do backgrounds who simply feel that I want to do different. I want to be different. Hence, we have this personal predisposition to be somewhat larger than life or somewhat different from the rest of the sheep. And being a gangster would have set him apart from his peer group. If his family background is safe and secure, then any kind of excitement, any kind of difference, any kind of thing that sets him apart from his peers would have been something he would aspire to.
Alastair Parkin was a teacher at Marcelin College when Gangitano was a student, and his reputation as a troublemaker was already firmly established.
Well, I do recall the principal inviting him down to the office many, many times. That became a sort of a standing thing. At the end of the day, everybody would be listening out for whether Alphonse was going to be invited down to the office again today.
The call would come over the loudspeaker, Alphonse Gangitano report to the headmaster's office. He'd driven the car to school and left it parked in one of the teacher's parking spots. You know, he was that kind of a bloke. He was pretty brazen up front, knew how to fight, but was a real smart ass. And as soon as you met him as a bloke, you'd say, I don't like this prick.
On the surface of things, his story is one of pure, naked ambition. From a young age, Gadgetano wanted to be a gangster. He had no criminal pedigree. He had no role model from the criminal world to act as his mentor. Ultimately, he became a gangster merely because he wanted to be one.
Homework, I think.
If he was doing so much homework, do you think his report would look the way it does?
He's a teenage boy. Let him have some privacy.
Privacy? I'd give him privacy. He needs to get outside, make some friends, and not sit down and watch movies all the time. Alphonse, come for lunch. Mum's made americana.
It's too spicy.
No, not today. No chili.
No chili.
All right, just a little chili for taste.
I hate chili, not even a tiny bit. Burns my mouth. When are you going to learn that I don't want to eat that shit?
Alphonse, you drink a little milk and the heat goes away.
Make me a salad and I'll be down in a minute.
Fallo in un'insalata, vuole un'insalata. Where are you going?
Pictures.
Who with?
Go to hell, Dad.
What about lunch?
I'll get something there.
From a very early age, he's identifying with criminals. Actually, the fictitious account of criminals, the movie star version of criminals. But somewhere in there, right early in the piece, he's saying, this is what I want to be. This is how I ought to be. So there's something already going off the rails about his identification, which would imply some hassle in the family.
He wanted to be a criminal, and there was no convincing him otherwise. His parents were lovely people, and they had a very nice family, but he was hell-bent on becoming a chalk outline in the footpath.
You know, the people make a decision, I want to make something in my life, I want to be an accountant or a doctor, whatever the case may be. And I think he just grew up manifested by the fact of these gangster lifestyles. His house had the Al Capone books, the gangster books, the Scarface, the Al Pacino posters in his study, and that type of thing. That's what he enveloped himself upon, and, you know, in his own small brain of manifestation to say, well, that's what I want to be, and he paid the ultimate price.
His childish gangster fetish or preoccupation would have been driven by the stories of other gangsters. It may well be that in his readings of Al Capone and people like that, the Godfather movies, for example, they all portrayed the Italians as being nice family people who were very, very dangerous. And maybe Gaetano fancied himself as being someone who could had the potential to be dangerous, or to portray himself as being someone who could be dangerous and be different.
I think Gangitano is a model sociopath insofar as his antisocial personality, his amoral thinking, very early on saw a way, a model, if you like, of the Godfather model that inspired him to follow that future.
The difference between a gangster and a violent criminal is one of process, not outcome. The importance is a gangster is a romantic figure, a tragic hero, whereas the violent criminal can be simply just someone who's a common person who just uses violence for a particular means or a particular outcome, a particular goal.
The man who helped Alphonse take that first step from fantasy to reality was the notorious Mark Chopper Reed.
He wanted to be a gangster, you know, and I was the first bloke to ever, give him a sawed-off shotgun. Because when I was 19, he was 16, 16 and a half when I was 19, and I gave him a sawed-off shotgun. It was beautiful, a sawed-off shotgun. My old man gave it to me. And I gave it to Alphonse when I got a handgun. And Alphonse thought it was great, you know. It was the first handgun he ever, sawed-off shotgun he ever had.
Armed with his first gun from Chopper Reed, Alphonse Gadgetano became a street hood. He ran with a group of thugs who were happy to set upon members of the general public, those who simply got in the way or at the wrong end of Gadgetano's violent temper. At a young age, he had already developed a pathological hatred for police. Gadgetano's routine was to prowl Melbourne's nightclubs, looking for off-duty police officers.
Look, he had a hatred for the police, absolute hatred, and I think it was likewise. The fact that he would take on the police at every opportunity that he had, he would take them on verbally and certainly physically.
Alphonse used to go around nightclubs and they'd pick on a few off-duty policemen, and the off-duty policeman would come up there and flash their badge and tell Alphonse to pull his head in, and he'd know they were off-duty because they'd be drinking alcohol. And he'd say to him, well, what are you, on duty or off duty? You know, and they'd say, well, we're off duty, we'll pull your head in. And so he'd take him to the shit house and bash him.
The assaults on police were very much about brand. They weren't about making money, it was just about letting everyone know that he was the toughest guy, you know, on the block. And he would just find off-duty police and just haul off on them, you know, come and step on their foot, they'd say, excuse me, then he'd belt them.
He saw us as the enemy, and as such, we saw him as the enemy and a public enemy at that, and needed to be taken care of.
But violent assaults on police officers were strictly for Gadgetano's amusement. He wanted to play with the big boys. He started hanging around a nightclub with a nasty reputation. Mickey's Disco in St Kilda was known as a hotspot for the Melbourne underworld. One of Mickey's Disco's owners was none other than Chris Rentakill Flannery. Flannery had a problem. He was facing a murder charge, and prostitute Deborah Boundy could put him away. Her testimony in court would finger Flannery for the murder of businessman Roger Wilson. Criminals like Flannery viewed Gadgetano as a kid, but a kid that could be useful. Gadgetano could get Flannery off the murder charge, but he would have to kill Deborah Boundy to do it.
It was easy, man. Easy. They reckon the first one's the hardest, but it was easy. Yeah, I loved it. Yeah, man, she fell for it straight away. Rathdown Street. I picked her up on Rathdown Street. Coffee. Then back to her place. Once she saw the powder, mate, she couldn't get into her arm quick enough. Hey, I know why they call them hot shots. You should have seen the sweat coming off her. I'm looking forward to my next one, I reckon.
She was overdosed with any sort of, like, lethal battery acid injection. Or acid out of the fire extinguisher or acid out of a battery. She would overdose with pure Chinese white. I mean, Mad Charlie liked to do it too. He'd sit people down with a bag of pure and he'd watch them. They'd put it into their arm and the first one had fall down head first to the coffee table. And the second one, I'd pick up the bag of pure and he'd say, you better not use as much there, I think that's a bit strong. And they'd use half of what the other fella do and they'd fall down too. And the third one, having watched the first two drop, it'd pick up the same bag and use half again and he'd drop three overdoses. And Charlie'd get up and walk out of the room. Yeah. And Ella come from the same school that Charlie did. In fact, Al taught Charlie the tricks. I think it would be quite easy for Al to overdose someone. You know, because she wasn't overdosed with any poison or anything, she was overdosed with pure.
Alphonse Gangitano admired Flannery, who to him as a street fighting man would have been an A-lister when he was an up and comer. It's often speculated that Alphonse Gangitano may have been the person who killed Deborah as a favour to a man that he looked up to.
He was showing to Flannery that he had the dash. He was showing that, you know, that he could do what had to be done, and he certainly developed that reputation.
The ultimate gangster is a person who can take life without feeling anything. And I suspect at 22, he probably had the constellation of skills and background and knowledge and access to the criminal world that would have made him killing someone far more possible than being a 13 or 14-year-old. I mean, when you have a reputation for killing people, you observe other people to treat you with more deference, more respect. To a child, it's not as meaningful. To a young man at 22, that kind of deference and respect would have been reinforcing. So it doesn't surprise me that at 22, he graduated to becoming the gangster he always aspired to.
Alphonse Gangitano killed Deborah Boundy, and in doing so, he made his bones, as they say in the criminal world. He now had a reputation as a killer and was a man to be feared. He established a loose confederation of criminals called the Carlton Crew. They included Jason and Mark Moran and their father Lewis, Graham Kinneber and Dominic McGatto. With well-known names like this behind him, Gangitano moved into the illegal casino trade and stood over businesses in the Carlton area, demanding protection money. If it was not forthcoming, he would unleash his violence on those who could not or would not pay. But one criminal decided that Gangitano was more bark than buck.
I got out of jail in 1976. I met him in the Dover Hotel, and I was talking to him about people, and I mentioned Shane Goodfellow's name. And I said, when I see that good fellow, I'm going to belt him, you know. And I didn't know Alphonse thought Shane Goodfellow was a hero, was a great street fighter, a legendary street fighter, and a good friend of Alphonse's. I'm in the shitty house having a poo. Next thing you know, the door's smashed open, and Alphonse is there with his boys, and they're kicking me in the face. And I've got up, wiped my bum, and I've got up, and I'm throwing punches at Alphonse. And I've clipped my eyes closed, and when I've opened my eyes, I'm throwing punches at the bouncers. Alphonse has disappeared. He knew that one day they would come back and bite him on the ass. You can't bash someone like me. See, if I want to get revenge on someone, I'll watch and I will wait. Revenge is a dish best eaten cold. I'll eat it freezing cold. I got hold of some Jolly Knight and handguns, and I started shooting up a few places that Alphonse was involved with. I went around the gambling club with the Jolly Knight, and he pushed his way out through the toilet window and landed on the roof of a Jag, of a Mercedes, and then hurt his back. Then went up to Mick Gatto and said, Chopper Reed's looking for me with this Jolly Knight and wants to blow my head off. I'm not frightened of Chopper Reed, but I'm worried about me family.
Gangitano had always been able to separate his family and criminal lives. But when the threat of Chopper Reed loomed, the two were in danger of merging.
Virginia was a very nice lady who found herself, as a lot of other women have, being married to criminal identities. She remained within that marriage. I think it was two children they had. Virginia was the type of person, when I spoke to her, that said, well, look, I don't get involved in what Alphonse does. I don't want to know. My job is to run the household, take the children to school. She knew what she was dealing with in relation to the unpredictability of Alphonse. At the end of the day, it was all driven, family was all driven by Virginia.
Retired detective Brian Murphy was at Mickey's Disco the night Alphonse and Virginia first met.
And I told her on that night, I said, give him away because he's going to leave you one day with a belly full of arms and legs with no money. And that's exactly what happened.
Chopper was a man who believed that revenge was a dish best served cold. The word was out that Chopper wanted a piece of him. The gangster swagger gone, Gangitano left the country, taking his wife Virginia and two children with him. He hid in Italy until news came that Chopper had been jailed in Tasmania for attempted murder. With Chopper out of the way, Gangitano returned to Melbourne, and once again, the cafes and restaurants of Lygon Street had to pay him off. With his arch nemesis behind bars, Gangitano was even more unpredictable and violent. He developed a bloated sense of entitlement, cars, money, even women. When Gangitano saw something he liked, he simply took it.
Excuse me, madam.
Yes?
This is a lovely car you're driving.
Thank you.
This is the V12 model, yeah?
That's right. So it's very comfortable.
Can I ask you just one more question? I won't keep you.
That's all right.
Let me introduce myself. I'm Alphonse Gangitano. How do you do?
Hello.
And you are?
I'm Yvonne.
Pleased to meet you, Yvonne. Now, as I was saying, I don't want to keep you, but the interior, that's leather, yeah?
Of course it's leather.
Yeah, look, I know, it must seem silly of me, but my question is, did you choose the colour of the seats, or is that the standard colour with that colour Duco?
No, I didn't choose it, but it...
No, it's perfect. It's... Why would anybody want any other colour? It's very cool.
Thank Thank you. Now, if you'll excuse me.
Actually, no. I love this car. Give me the keys.
Pardon me?
No. It's cool. I just want your car. Give me the keys, please.
No, why should I give you my keys?
I love this car. I want to drive it. Now, give me the fucking keys.
No. Now, if you'll excuse me.
Listen, you stuck-up bitch. You either give me the keys or I'll fucking take them. You know who I am? Alphonse Gangitano. Now get out of the car, please. Thank you, Yvonne.
He was an egomaniac. He'd built a reputation. He'd built enough hoons and thugs around him to get away with almost anything, and certainly around the Carlton area, he could just march up to people and say, give me your car. Give me the keys now. I'm Alphonse Gangitano. What are you going to do?
It's a bit hard to turn around and say what the value of the car was to him. It may well have been instrumental in developing his reputation, and it may well have been simple curiosity. I want to drive this car, give me the car keys, I'm taking it around the block, and I'll dump it wherever I want to dump it. But it certainly fits within that profile of the psychopath, the sense of entitlement, the sense of I can take it because it's the person that I am.
So I suppose in Gangitano's case, there is that sense of entitlement, which is not uncommon for someone who is a psychopath. They've got an inflated sense of self, right? So they're very grandiose. And also, I guess, their lack of remorse, lack of guilt, you know, in terms of what they do, so they don't care if they take something and how it impacts on other people.
Listen, you stuck-up bitch. You either give me the keys or I'll fucking take them. You know who I am? Alphonse Gangitano. Now get out of the car.
So people did hand their keys over, and certainly there was one story that he used to carry a pink slip around in his glove box. He could just get them to sign over the car right then and there. It was Wild West territory up on Lygon Street back in those days, and he was the baddest hombre of the lot at that time.
Funnily enough, no one who had a car taken by Gangitano ever reported it missing, even though he would often drive around in it for months. For all his preening and his expensive Italian suits, Gangitano never quite made a go of his businesses. His main skill was extortion, and only so much money could be made from that enterprise. He was also a degenerate gambler, always borrowing money that he never intended to pay back. Thinking he could turn a dollar from the boxing world, Gangitano started a company called Superstar Promotions, and signed up as many boxers as he could, including an up-and-comer, a super lightweight by the name of Lester Ellis. His mate Jason Moran was making a killing, selling amphetamines and tablets to the nightclub crowds in Melbourne. But with drugs, especially cocaine, Gangitano became more a consumer than a supplier.
It was no longer about business, it was no longer about enriching the group, it was all about Alphonse's reputation. And it was said that he was doing far too much cocaine, he was paranoid, he was making threats against his friends as well, it wasn't just his enemies.
I suppose given his long-term, well, his proneness to violence and the fact that he is a long-term abuser of amphetamine and cocaine, then he would be even quicker to anger and violence. The drug addiction would just exacerbate the violence and aggression.
Still think I'm a plastic gangster?
He borrowed money off a lot of Calabrian fellow families and didn't pay it back. And you can't do this in an Italian community. You can't just borrow money, 10, 20 grand off people and not pay it back. And then go like that, you know. And then bash members of their family if they come and have a go at you.
Here is a person who is beyond control, beyond authority, who can take things as a whim because there's a sense of entitlement that goes with taking something as a whim.
There was still money to be made, and Gangitano threw it all behind promoting the big fight between his charge, the champion, Lester Ellis, and the contender and veteran of the fight game, Barry Michael, for the IBF super lightweight title on July 12, 1985. But it was Michael who won the fight after 15 grueling rounds. Gangitano had gambled heavily on Ellis, and lost.
In boxing, 30-year-old challenger Barry Michael made light weight of the 10-year difference between himself and Lester Ellis to win a unanimous points decision in their IBF title fight last night.
It's been a good round for Michael, a good left to the head, a left into the body.
Even before the decision was announced, it was obvious to everyone who'd won, even Michael and Ellis.
He's the new IBF World Junior Lightweight Champion.
Look, mate, I just can't express how great it feels.
We'll get it back. We've got a contract for a rematch. And fucking Lester will smash him next time.
But I don't give a hooker's moan about the cash.
But it's $2 million.
Cash is easy to come by. I wanted that world title. We've lost the world title. How did Michaels make that weight? How did he make the fucking weight?
He must have fucking slept in the sauna.
We'll get that little prick in the next shot. We'll get him in the rematch.
What do you think of that movie?
Oh, that's great, I loved it.
It's pretty realistic, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah. Who's that from? Look, excuse me for one moment, yeah? Just got to take care of the show.
So, what are you doing,
mate? Thank you, Alphonse. Very kind of you.
Hey, it's my honour. Buy a drink for a world champion?
I'll drink to that.
Take a seat. We need to talk about something.
Oh, mate, I got my wife and a mate.
Come on, just 1 minute.
All right, 1 minute.
Out of here, fellas. Champ and I need to talk about a rematch. So, Lester and I are still waiting for another shot.
We'll keep on waiting, Alphonse, because I'm chasing some big scalps in England now.
Yeah, well, Lester reckons you're a has-been that's running away from it.
Better a has-been than I never was.
First thing I thought was I'm possibly dead. I knew they carried guns. And I turned to Alphonse and I said, "You effing so-and-so, you've set me up." And he just lunged at me and he grabbed me by the lapels of my jacket as he pulled me down the couch with him, got a serious grip on my cheek. And I got my hands up trying to gouge his eyes to get him off me. And immediately they were like a pack of mongrel dogs on top of me.
Alphonse bashed him so badly in the brain, like he kicked him, punched him and hit him so fucking much around the head.
And then another one came in. The next thing I know, I'm being dragged up off the couch, dragged through the crowd with blood spraying everywhere off my face.
They made a mess of Barry Michaels. They completely screwed Barry Michaels' boxing career. I don't think he could walk straight after that. You know, it knocked his equilibrium out.
And I just remember being pounded and battered and being sort of held down and
kick, kick, kick. You know, bash, 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 getting your foot, you know. Oh, shocking damage to him. Shocking.
You know, I think they were filthy on me because basically they'd outsmarted themselves, really, and I'd outsmarted them, and I had the title. I'd taken the title off the goose that laid the golden egg.
Lester Ellis had no involvement in Gadgetano's crimes. Like Barry Michael, Lester Ellis was just a boxer trying to make his way in the game. Waiting 2 years to take his revenge on Barry Michael was standard Gadgetano MO. He would bash, beat or kill anyone who got in his way. This routine would continue relentlessly into the 1990s. In every career criminal's life, there comes a moment where it all falls apart. For Gadgetano, that moment came on the 19th of December, 1995, when he and his mate Jason Moran walked into the Sports Bar, a nightclub in Melbourne's King Street district. They set upon the patrons in the club with billiard cues and metal bars. Gadgetano in particular took to the task with his trademark enthusiasm for violence. Gadgetano and Moran were both charged with affray. There was a host of revealing CCTV footage, and on this occasion, some brave victims were prepared to come forward to put both men away.
The court heard four people were hospitalised with injuries including a fractured nose, cuts, bruises, a fractured jaw and permanent eye damage. Mr. Gadgetano was granted bail with a $10,000 surety, a night curfew and an order to seek psychiatric treatment.
He was out of control. He and Jason Moran had bashed nightclub goers and management at the sports bar on King Street. It had been a gratuitous attack, purely trying to stand over the owners there. It said to his friends that he was now a liability.
He and Moran were the most violent pair of bastards together you'd ever wish to meet in a day's hunting. But they used to fight amongst themselves because they were both similar type of people. Couldn't be told, couldn't be controlled, and didn't want to be. They just wanted to be the king of the patch.
Some believe that Gadgetano had some sort of road to Damascus conversion after the affray, that he looked on his life of crime with horror and regret. But could a man who'd revelled in violence his entire life be capable of such a change?
When he was 42, it sounded like Gadgetano was thinking about leaving his life of crime. Now, some people may say that it could be due to remorse. He wanted to make up, or he was sorry for what he had done. However, if Gadgetano was a true psychopath, it's very unlikely that he actually had any remorse or guilt. Chances are, it's just because it's getting too much for him. He's just seeing that it's too inconvenient for him. Another thing, too, that's also been shown in the research is that a lot of psychopaths, their violent or criminal behaviors tend to decrease after the fourth decade of life.
It may well be he simply matured out of it. It may well be it simply wasn't enough to feed his ego or his persona. He may simply have just tired of the entire grind of looking over your shoulder. And it may well have been he saw the young kids coming up behind him and decided that there wasn't much of a life career in this. Very few gangsters get to retire to a house on the Gold Coast and left in peace. Most of them meet some sort of end because they require the work, they need the money, or someone else is looking to build their reputation on your demise.
On the morning of January the 16th, 1998, Gadgetano had appeared at court for a mention on the affray at the sports bar. He was given bail under stringent conditions. He had a 9 o'clock curfew imposed. The word on the streets was that Gadgetano was going to plead guilty, and this would leave Jason Moran facing a certain jail sentence. Gadgetano dutifully went home before curfew, and there he stayed until a couple of unexpected visitors turned up.
Yeah, large supreme. Delivery. No, no garlic bread, no chilli. Yet not a touch, yeah? Geez, that was quick. No, no, look, look, there's just someone on my door. Hang on, hang on.
Nice outfit, mate. You knew I was coming.
Tough fucking day, mate. How you doing? Call you back. Mate, they got me bent over here, mate. They flown in some South African who's gonna fuck me in the box. I got a plead on it. There's nothing I can do.
Well, we're gonna have to talk about it, Alphonse, because if you put your hand up for this one, Jason's in the shit.
Mate, what can I do? I don't have a choice.
What are you doing walking around in your undies?
Mate, Ginny's out, okay? Mate, she's taking the kids to her sister's or something. I should be back in a couple of hours. Jesus.
I don't suppose you got a beer.
No. There's no beer in there, mate. Have a glass of wine.
Wine? Not for a bet.
I'm on a curfew here, okay?
Well, how about I go and grab a slab and a couple of pizzas and then we sit down and just have a little chat about what went on in court today?
Mate, nothing went on in court, okay? I got a mention. That's it.
How are you going to plead?
Mate, I'm going to plead guilty. Mate, they got me over a barrel, okay?
Templestowe Shops, best place to go for beer and pizza?
Yeah. You want some dough?
No, mate. Be back in a minute. Mate, you got a visitor.
Not those bloody Jehovah's Witnesses again.
Worse than that, mate.
You in the neighbourhood, Jason?
Heard Ginny left you, mate.
Yeah? Who told you that?
Smartest thing she ever did.
She's visiting her sister.
Get yourself a good lawyer, you'll get to see him every other day, Alphonse. It's fucking much more than what I'll get where I'm going.
Look, I can't talk about this now. I've been in court all day, and I've got a curfew. For once, this isn't about you, you selfish prick.
You grass me up, guarantee me 2 years jail, and I'm selfish.
I had no choice. We've talked about this, okay? I had to plead on it.
All right, this is going nowhere. Why don't I go and get some beers?
Fuck him, Graham, he's a dog.
Who are you calling a dog?
You're loaded, mate.
Fuck you, this is my house.
Jason, put the gun away. Let's just take a deep breath.
Go and get your gun. I'm gonna end this.
Come on, guys, you're supposed to be mates.
Mates don't grass on mates.
All right. Tough man.
Now listen, calm down the period.
Get it.
You're a fucking idiot, Jason.
My problem was never with you, Graham. Let's leave it that way.
Crime figure Alphonse Gangitano was gunned down in his Templestowe home. His wife found him lying in a pool of blood in the laundry. He'd been shot 3 times in the head and body. His killer has not been found.
It was on the 16th of January, 98. I was on the on-call crew in charge of the on-call team. Received a call about midnight, 1 o'clock in the morning, that Alphonse had been found shot dead in his home in Templestowe. We found that he'd been shot. He was lying deceased in the laundry, suffered a number of gunshot wounds to the body and also to the head.
There seems to have been a decision to, as they say in the underworld, tug his coat. Graham Kinnebrough was a well-known mediator. He was renowned for resolving things without violence. It's alleged that he and Jason Moran went to Gangitano's house in Templestowe for a discussion.
The evidence then suggested that Jason Moran arrived. He was dropped off up the road. Indications are he then walked into the house. He was allowed in. Anyone else or someone that Alphonse didn't know certainly wouldn't have been allowed access. I believe at that stage that Jason Moran had pulled a pistol, shot Alphonse. Graham Kinnebrough was present, and I believe Graham didn't know what was happening. I think things settled down thereafter. Then they come to their senses a little bit between Graham and Jason.
4 days before he was killed, Brian Murphy went to warn Gangitano his time was up.
We got over there and Alphonse was sitting there like Lord of the Manor, but he was really the prince at this stage. And I said to him, listen, you know you're well and truly going to get knocked. I said, you've robbed all your mates. I said, there's over $250,000 missing. A lot of Jason Moran, Kinnebrough, they were all crook on him. And that's what led to his demise. And he said, there's no fucking way I'm going to get knocked. He said, they're my buddies. And I said, good, yeah. And my mate rang me the morning, got killed. He said, see, where one of his fucking buddies has just knocked him off.
Oh, I didn't like Alphonse at all. I hated Alphonse's guts. I mean, I was rapt when he died. I mean, Jesus, I thought, fantastic. That's like, it's a godsend. I mean, I was rapt.
Unlike the latter murders that we've had of time, it was tit for tat. No one shed any tears apart from his family and kids, of course, in relation to losing Alphonse. No one was looking for revenge for Alphonse, and I think it was the fact that his peers, in relation to the criminal element, said, well, good riddance, he's not going to bring the law back looking at us because he was out of control.
Gangitano had outlived his welcome. He had gambled away over $250,000 of other people's money, and he had betrayed his criminal friends.
They said, listen, Alphonse, I've been putting holes in his manners, and he just won't pull up, he won't pull his head in, he's embarrassing everyone, he's causing everyone too much trouble, and something's got to be done. And so this character gave the nod, because you couldn't go and shoot Alphonse at this time, because not without some sort of permission, you know. You just couldn't go and shoot him because he was too well connected with other people. So they gave the nod and someone shot him.
Ironically, from his own belief of being the Capone or the De Niro of the Melbourne underworld at the time, that he dies in the laundry, in the floor, riddled with bullets in his underpants.
Chopper Reed believes Gangitano would have liked to have gone out in a blaze of glory.
He would have preferred to be in his best suit, showered, shaved with his Dolce Gabbana aftershave on, probably at a restaurant somewhere with his lady friend, with a heckler and cock 9mm automatic down the front of his pants, and someone come bursting in and they filled Alphonse's with about a dozen in the chest, but Alphonse has taken the dozen in the chest and pulled out his heckler and cock and gone return fire, bang, 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 and killed the 6 men that have come in to kill him. before falling down dead to the music of Frank Sinatra singing I Did It My Way, you know?
Moran was certainly Gangitano's killer, and he too would have his life ended abruptly, shot dead in front of his children while sitting in his car at a football clinic in 2003. Graham Kinneberg was a witness to the crime. He would not give up his good mate's son, and he went to the grave with his secret. He too was shot dead in Melbourne's gang wars. For the would-be gangster, the self-crowned Black Prince of Lygon Street, Alphonse Gangitano, there would be no heroic end. He was shot in the back. He died in his underwear on the floor of his own home.